There were no other tools around. No screws or bolts. I don't see any bolts.
Lightning bolts!
Her voice rose so loud it shook the stone walls.
The pool?
I looked over my shoulder, then back to her with a you've gotta be kidding expression. You want me to touch one of those things?
You must choose one in order for this to work, she said,
holding the hammer over her shoulder like she was ready to use it on me.
Now, hurry up.
For what to work? The cane? She must have registered my reluctance to stick my hand in the water and touch a lightning bolt.
Do you think I'd go to all this effort, pound lightning like I haven't done in centuries, just so I could watch you fry your puny brain?
Point taken. I went over to the pool and squatted down. The bolts zipped through the water like racer fish. As I reached in, she yelled,
Wait!
Well, what? I stumbled back. The spark striker stepped down from her stool.
Do you have any allergies?
Allergies?
To lightning, electricity, white hot energy?
Pretty sure I don't. Not that I'd ever touched lightning or white hot energy.
That's good.
Then with a nod of her chin, she motioned for me to continue. I dipped my right hand into the pool. I felt a burst of heat on my skin, but it didn't scald me. The bolts zipped past, weaving through my grasp. Then they went still, except for one. It slipped into my hand, and I lifted it out of the water. It was like holding a warm tin foil-wrapped burrito fresh from the oven, except this pulsed like a living thing. I went back to the cave and handed it over to the spark striker. She examined it, then muttered, It'll do. As if each bolt was unique. Maybe they were. Stepping onto her stool, she said,
Well, climb up here.
I didn't like where this was going. What for?
So I can pound this into your leg.
I swallowed, did a double take, and almost laughed. Are you kidding? You want to pound my leg with lightning?
That's what I said, isn't it?
I don't think that's such a good idea. I mean, my leg. It already doesn't work too good, and...
This is why gods and humans don't mix. Never can tell what you're going to get.
She set down her hammer.
Zane, your father is the heart of the sky.
Yeah, I know.
He's very powerful.
Uh-huh. Already knew that, too. She looked down at my bum leg, then back to me.
He's also the serpent leg.
Yeah, and he passed it on to me, I said, swinging my bad leg. She smacked her skinny lips together.
A typical human would assume that a serpent leg is useless, but in a god, the power of the serpent is unparalleled.
You're trying to tell me my bum leg is powerful?
Your leg, she said slowly, is the most powerful part of you, not the weakest. It's the doorway to your magic, the only clue to your ancestry.
Someone needed to give her a reality check. Are you going to tell me to run with the storm, too?
Why, for the love of all that's holy, would I tell you to run with the storm?
Because I'm the storm runner. Her eyes flashed some sort of recognition.
That name was given to you by a goddess.
Okay, I said, neither confirming nor denying it.
The god's language is hard to translate for the human mind, she said. There are many meanings. Runner can also mean, how do I say it? Channel, a conduit, power.
I'm like a channel of the storm? Slowly, the gears in my mind started to rotate. So the demon runners were channels of demon power? She wrapped her knuckles on my forehead.
Are you understanding what I'm telling you, storm runner?
She was starting to irritate me. Maybe you could just give me the bottom line?
You, she paused, you are the storm. And the storm is you.
Okay, so I wasn't prepared for that.
As I opened my mouth to shout, "What the holy heck are you talking about?" she held up her hand. "The storm sleeps inside of you. Once I pound the lightning into your leg, it will awaken and race through your blood and bones like a hurricane of magic. It will locate your dominant power."
"Power?"
"Yes, your father, god of storms, fire, and wind. Are you even paying attention? Don't give me that sour face. We need to know if any of his strength was passed on to you."
"Fire and wind?
Hello," she said with an annoyed look. "Your father? Heavy hitter? Creator and destroyer?"
"Fine, the guy's tough, but what do you mean by dominant?"
"Hurrikan has many powers. Not all of them have been passed to you. Something that epic would kill any human. We need to find out where you're strongest."
Now I was following. "So my powers have nothing to do with running?" She wiped her brow with frustration.
"The storm runs through you, in you. You and the storm must become one, which is why I must pound this lightning into you. But let's not get ahead of ourselves."
She shook her head, and again the bells in her hair shifted but didn't ring.
"You could also possess nothing of true value. Storms need a place to spend their power, and you may be a terrible vessel with no ability to control any of it."
"Nothing of true value? Terrible vessel? Well, that would officially stink."
"Now, do you want to know the truth of your ancestry?"
I nodded slowly.
"Then let me do my job. Up you go."
I climbed onto the stone slab and lay back as she gripped both the bolt and the hammer.
"Wait! What?"
"Is it going to hurt?" She set the glowing thing over my leg and raised her hammer.
"More than you know."
Chapter 36. Note to self, never ask someone if it's going to hurt unless you're 100% prepared for the truth. And no way, Jose, was I prepared for the Spark Striker's answer. My leg felt like a million branding irons were being pressed into it. The pain was so awful, I couldn't even scream. The world exploded in a brilliant stream of white, like I was being shot through a meteor shower. I had to close my eyes. Heat spread through me. Then everything went quiet and still. I was in the empty. But how? I no longer had the jade. I was in an open temple on top of a pyramid. I blinked and looked down at my body. I had spotted paws again and muscular jaguar legs. With a deep breath, I shook myself and started searching.
"Hurrikan!"
My voice echoed across the plaza below, ricocheting between the stone buildings. There was no answer. I bolted to the other side of the temple, calling for him. The sun was setting over the sea, and the empty felt exactly like that, deserted, abandoned.
"Hurrikan!"
I yelled again.
"Could use a little help about now."
I paced across the temple, scanning the jungle below. Maybe he was mad I hadn't listened to his advice about the twins. Did he need me to tell him he'd been right about them not helping me? That I'd made a huge mistake? His voice found me first. "I knew you'd show up." Then he materialized in the same Black Panther form. Yeah, I sort of wanted to nuzzle the guy, but only because I was relieved to see that he was actually there.
"You didn't tell me I was going to get lightning pounded into my leg."
"No sense worrying you," he said. "Sometimes it's better not to know what's coming."
Mm-hmm.
So not comforting. I sat back on my haunches. The sun was setting, and everything, the trees, the sky, the sea, looked tranquil, like they were all taking a deep breath. "I lost the jade." He nodded slowly, but didn't say anything. His eyes blazed a brilliant green. I stood and walked closer. "So how am I here?" "The ceremony the Spark Striker is performing would have brought you to me." "Ceremony?" That was an interesting word choice. "Me? I'd have used torture." "What power is she going to find?" I asked.
"She isn't going to find anything. The lightning bolt you chose, that chose you, That's the source that will uncover the truth. He stalked closer. But you already know the answer, don't you?
Pretty sure I wouldn't be here if I knew the answer. Maybe I'm simply here to avoid the I'd rather die pain.
I want to show you something.
We headed down to the shore and stood beneath a group of tall, leafy trees. The sand was white, soft, and warm. The sun was a ball of fire, lowering itself into the water slowly. Huracan said, "Close your eyes."
"What? Why?"
He gave me a look. I closed my eyes.
"What do you see?"
he asked.
"Darkness." "Try again. Imagine yourself on the table. Imagine the lightning coursing through your blood. Imagine the lightning as a part of you."
I did what he asked, and as I did, my fingertips tingled like before. A terrible heat started to rise in me, so hot I imagined it was the surface of the sun. It raced through my blood. Like before, it felt too big to contain. I opened my eyes and whispered, "Fire." If a jungle cat could smile, it would look like the expression Huracan gave me.
"Ah," he said, "the son of fire. Surprising."
When someone tells you you're the son of fire and it's your dominant power, you sort of want to pump your fist slash paw in the air and holler, "Awesome!" So, yeah, I did. Total impulse. Then,
"Wait. You said surprising. Why?"
"As the Spark Striker told you, not all powers of the storm can be passed to you without killing you. I would have predicted wind or rain, something less moody."
"What do you mean, less moody?"
I didn't know elements had bad days.
"Fire is my least favorite element, the most challenging."
His tail swished through the air.
"Challenging? Not easy to control, and highly unpredictable. I don't like unpredictability."
"Okay, so fire is my power. Do I, like, throw flames at you-know-who? Barbecue the guy? Will that do the trick?"
"First, you have to open the gateway in your leg."
"How?"
"Do you feel it? The pulsing? The energy bound there?"
I focused on my bum leg. Huracan was right. When I isolated my thoughts to this one part of me, a strange energy pulsed through my entire body. It was amazing.
"Now, feed the flame with your life source and..."
"And what?"
"You need a source of heat."
He motioned toward the sun.
"Draw on its power."
I was about to ask, "How the heck do I do that?" when he added,
"Call it to you."
I remembered the way I had felt that night at Jack in the Box, how some external force had found its way to me, and my fingers had tingled with some kind of heat. I inched closer to the sea. The waves lapped at my feet. Following my instinct, I drew on the sun and felt heat building in me. Slowly at first, then fast. Too fast. I couldn't breathe. Huracan said,
"Let it go."
I raised a paw, thinking maybe I could shoot fireballs out of it or something. But nothing happened. Except the heat kept rising. I started to panic.
"Relax, Zane," Huracan commanded.
"Easy for you to say." He wasn't the one being cooked from the inside out.
"You have the power, Zane. The fire answers to you. Feed it with your breath. Yes, like that. Steady, deep breaths."
Except my breath was smoking right out of my nose, and no way could I relax. I began to hyperventilate. The burning snaked its way through me at unimaginable speed. I started for the water, and with my first panic stride, I saw that my claws were glowing red, as in iron forging red.
"Zane,"
Huracan shouted as he blocked my path, "release it." "I need the water."
"No. If you take the easy way out now, you'll never learn to control it. Trust me."
The power was building, heavy and strong, and so hot I thought I was going to combust. Puffs of smoke curled from my nose and mouth. I spun, let out a fierce roar, and slashed a tree trunk with my burning claws. The trunk burst into flames that spread to the leaves, and then the next tree, and the next. A second later, a huge wave formed, curling taller than a 10-story building. It crashed down on our heads, and I spun blindly under the water. Just as quickly, it receded. I shook my body like a dog, trying to get dry. Horikan sighed.
Maybe a little more focus next time.
Focus? It was burning me alive.
It will destroy you if you don't release its power. The energy has to have somewhere to go. Do you understand?
I nodded, still out of breath, and wondered if I ever wanted to call fire to me again. I thought using my power was going to be easy, or at least natural. If you can't control it, I said angrily, then how am I supposed to be able to?
I never said I couldn't control it. I said fire is very challenging, Zane.
Yeah, no kidding. At the same moment, the world began to spin wildly, like I was in a dryer on high.
Looks like the spark striker's done, he said.
Wait!
What?
What if I never learn to control it?
It's your dominant power. It will yield, eventually. But you really should be friendlier to it.
I started to ask if I could trade fire for something easier, but I was already flying back. An instant later, I sat up on Spark Striker's table with my nose dripping blood. Oh yeah, I'd forgotten about that little side effect of travel to the empty. I blotted it with my shirt. It's fire, I sputtered. A slow smile spread across the Spark Striker's face. Then a bell in her hair gave a small jingle. She looked over her shoulder at the cave opening.
Blasted hounds of hell?
What? Blasted what?
No more time, she said, shooing me out of the cave.
My lightning-pounded leg buzzed with incredible strength.
But you said blasted and hell in the same sentence. That can't be good. What did you mean? When my bells ring, it tells me someone's arrived. In the old world.
I knew I wasn't going to like the answer, so I didn't ask the question. But she told me anyway.
A pooch is here, Zane. Are you ready?
Chapter 37. Who could ever be ready to face and destroy the God of Death? I wasn't, even though I was the son of fire and had a tricked-out super cane slash spear and a lightning-enhanced leg that made me feel like I could scale tall buildings in a single bound. Everything went berserk. The bells in the Spark Striker's hair started jingling so loud they made my ears ache. Then her eyes rolled back until only the whites were showing, and her skin vibrated and flapped like loose rubber. No wonder her face was so out of whack. Was I supposed to do something? Call 911 for the supernatural? Give her CPR? Find some superglue?
You idiot!
That was nobody. She swooped into the cave and morphed into her human form. I could see now that she was young, maybe Hondo's age. She had pale freckled skin, shimmering dark eyes, and an upturned mouth that looked like it was on the verge of a sneer. Definitely not a smile.
I didn't do anything, I shouted, hoping the Spark Striker would come out of her creepy face-morphing seizure any second.
Get a bolt, nobody commanded. This time I knew what she was talking about. I hurried to the well and came back with a small piece of lightning. Nobody laid the Spark Striker on the slab, then took the hammer and pounded the bolt into the Spark Striker's chest like some kind of defibrillator. The old woman snapped straight up and took a gasping breath. Her nose had shifted another inch to the right, and her mouth was so close to her chin, I thought it might slide off her face any second.
Blasted gods!
That was annoying, Spark Striker said, hopping onto her stool.
How dare so many descend at the exact same time?
She cursed and pounded her fist into the stone slab. Nobody began to adjust the Spark Striker's nose and mouth as though her face were made of wax.
We've got the whole Council of Gods out there,
the spark striker hissed. I'm Ishtab. She closed her eyes and took a deep breath. She's hunting for a pooch as we speak.
Why the heck was the council here? They had to be here to hunt down a pooch, or maybe even me. Hadn't Jazz said this would be the last place they'd look? The gods were fast.
No! My voice erupted in a hot panic. I have to find him first!
Nobody rolled her eyes. There was something annoyingly familiar about the way she did it, with a toss of her head and a subtle tilt of her chin. The spark striker's gaze hardened.
The storm runner's right. Track down Apooch before Ishtab and her hellhounds do. I'm counting on you, Quinn.
Quinn? My heart came to a stuttering stop. As in Brooks's sister? As in promise to... Was it Jordan or Bird?
Quinn's eyes cut my way angrily. I'm a warrior huntress of the White Spark Striker tribe.
She said the words like they were rehearsed. But behind her cold glare, I could see I'd touched a nerve.
Enough inconsequential drivel, the Spark Striker said. I'm not about to lose my warriors to the gods' worthless war. So both of you work together and get this thing done.
But Brooks is here, I blurted. She's been looking for you, Quinn. You're supposed to be...
I was shouting with the panic of someone on a sinking ship. Quinn held up her hand. Later. Right now, I've got the stinking one to hunt down. And you? You better get ready, because you'll only get one shot. And it better be a good one, because none of us are in the mood to die today.
The spark striker turned on her stool, grabbed me by the shoulders, and shook me once.
One shot, Stormrunner. One thrust with the spear should do it. It now has the power of your blood and fire running through it.
One shot? Like in the leg? I swallowed hard.
His head or heart would be preferable. And if you fail, I will have no choice but to unleash the gods. Until then, my warriors will do their best to lead them away from Apooch's trail. Do you understand?
Then, because people don't usually help for no reason, it occurred to me to ask, why are you doing all this for me?
I always try to choose the winning side.
That worked for me. I only hoped she'd made the right choice.
Quinn morphed into her eagle form. Climb on my back and hold on. It'll be a long way down if you fall.
Everything was happening so fast, I thought my head might explode. But Quinn was right about one thing. I had a single purpose, to find Pukeface before any of the gods did and waste the guy. I clung to Quinn's long, thick feathers as we sailed over the old world. If it weren't for the fact that there was a high likelihood my life was about to be shortened, I would have thought it was the coolest flight in world history. From up there, everything below looked like a miniature cardboard cutout, a game board where everything, even death, is make-believe. She soared over Puxical. I saw Hondo and Jazz were still conked out, but Brooks, she was gone. Ugh! Someone needed to attach a locator chip to her.
Where's Brooks?
What if she'd been abducted or something?
That's not your quest. Stay focused! She's your sister. There isn't time.
I was about to ask how one tiny detour could hurt when she lifted her head and snarled.
I picked up his scent.
A few minutes later, we were flying to the outer edges of the old world, far from the glassy river at its heart. The jungle grew denser the farther we traveled. Every once in a while, Quinn would rotate her head to look around, then dive close to the earth. Each time I thought, this is it. But then she'd sail back into the black sky. Up close, the atmosphere looked as thin as crepe paper. A tiny tear ran through its center.
The sky looks like it's going to rip open, I shouted, as we flew higher and higher.
The gods aren't united, Quinn said. The world will collapse if they really do go to war.
Don't they care about this place?
Some do, some don't. Some might even want to see the old ways destroyed.
Is that what you want?
She huffed and said,
None of your business, Zeno Bispo.
Get your head in the game, understand? Because either way, Apuche's going down tonight.
My cane glowed, and its powerful pulse matched my own. One shot. I had only one shot. I don't know why I told her, but the words tumbled out like marbles. I'll become his soldier of death unless I'm the one to take him out. I glanced at my arm, peeled the flower bandage back. The wound was better, and the mark? It was gone. Mostly. There was only a faint white outline of the skull. Had the lightning ceremony healed me? Even if it had, I knew I was still linked to Apuch. Quinn's whole body stiffened. Her wings spread farther, and she slowed for a split second. And if the gods kill him? He and I are connected, so I'll die too. She flapped her wings, picking up speed. Not tonight, Zain Obispo. Not tonight. Quinn? Why are you still talking? If something happens to me, promise you'll find Brooks, okay? I couldn't figure why she would have wandered away from camp, except she was Brooks. Quinn didn't answer, because a black owl with gold eyes came out of nowhere and slammed into her. I lay flat on Quinn as she spun into a nosedive. Muwan sped through the dark after us, screeching. Quinn righted herself and flew parallel to the ground, but Muwan was faster. She whizzed past, ripping Quinn's left wing with her talons. Quinn let out a piercing cry as she tipped too far to the left. I clung even tighter to keep from falling. Jump! Quinn cried. Was she loca? Apuche's laughter echoed across the treetops. I jerked my cane/spear free. Muwan zipped overhead, her black wings extended wide, ready to wrap me in their darkness. Quinn was dropping fast. Muwan made a third pass, and this time, I knew it was for the kill. Without thinking, I launched my cane at her chest. Take that, you mangy! I couldn't come up with a proper insult in the moment, so I settled for, You suck! As it sailed through the air, I saw that it really had changed into a spear. It struck the target with perfect accuracy. Muwan released a terrible scream and started tumbling through the air. I watched in horror as she crashed into the bare trees below. They shook on impact, their sharp branches splitting her open. Chapter 38. Quinn was in free fall. We were close to the trees, and I knew the sharp branches would rip us up if she continued at this speed. My eyes darted through the dark. Up ahead, 20 or so yards past the jungle, was a small field, big enough for a safe landing. There! I pointed. I can't make it! Quinn cried as she plunged nearer to the branches that might as well have been spikes. You're a warrior huntress of the White Spark Striker tribe, I screamed, and Brooks needs you. I could feel her giant eagle muscles struggling, flexing. Down, down, down we went, inches from the trees. Just a little farther, a little farther. With an ear-splitting cry, Quinn redoubled her efforts, but not before we grazed the last tree's branches and their sharp tips raked her. We crash-tumbled into the field. White stars danced in front of me. Everything went black for a second. Then came the pain that shot up my legs. I was on my knees when I scrambled over to her. She was back in human form. Quinn! She groaned and sat up slowly. You better be worth all this trouble, she said, flinching and holding her left side. She was breathing too fast. You're bleeding. No kidding, Captain Obvious. What do I do? I wasn't exactly trained in Nawal first aid. Do you mean, will I live? Yeah, I'll be fine. She looked down at the slashes on her left arm. The walls have super healing powers, so I'm not going to die tonight. But you might, if you don't find that spear. Yeah, why had I thrown my only weapon? Because I'd had no other choice. Not that Quinn was grateful for it. My hand tingled with a strange energy, like I'd slept on it for the last 10 hours, and it was only now prickling to life. I scanned the dense trees, and in the middle of their darkness, I saw a faint blue light glowing like a dimming candle. That had to be the cane. Sparkstriker had loaded it with a Find My Cane app, I guessed. I stood up to circle back for the spear, and as I did, I saw a figure running toward us in the moonlight. Brooks! With her glowing eyes, ninja black clothes, and intense expression, she looked like a barefoot warrior. Quinn groaned. She's going to kill me. I stepped out of the way. I mean, no need to get in the middle of a family squabble. When Brooks reached us, her eyes were on Quinn, and Quinn only. She fell to her knees to inspect her sister's wounds. A second later, she declared, "You'll live." Quinn nodded slowly. "That's good." Brooks narrowed her eyes. "It'll make killing you easier." "I should have called," Quinn said, "but I couldn't. This conflict is so much bigger than you know." "I thought you were trapped in Shabalba. How are you here? Why are you here?" Then Brooks's burning gaze turned to me. "And why are you with my sister?" "How did you find us?" I asked, deflecting her question with one of my own. "This. It buzzed all the way here." She held up the jade. My mouth fell open. You found it? How?" "I went back to the boat," she said, the corners of her mouth almost upturned as she set it in my open hand. "It was wedged between the deck and the seat." So that's where she'd gone. I wrapped her in a huge bear hug. "Zane, you're," she gasped, "smothering me." I let her go. "Sorry. Did you take some adrenaline pills or something?" she asked me. "He got pounded with lightning," Quinn said. Then she stiffened, and her eyes went wide as she spotted something. "We've got company." A dark shadow rose in front of me. Black, hissing mist with the familiar puke and rotten fish smell that still made me gag. Someone really needed to tell Apooch to take a bath or wear some deodorant. Maybe carry a car freshener in his pocket. Nah, even that wouldn't help. "Get out of here," I told Brooks and Quinn. "Not a chance," Brooks said in her signature stubborn tone. Apooch wasn't in his nice Hollywood suit this time. Steam rose from his gray body, and like before, I could see worms twisting over his transparent skin, banding together as he rose to his full height. His eyes blazed hot white, and he clenched his fist at his sides as his chest heaved. "You'll pay for Muwan," he hissed. His eyes found Brooks and Quinn. "You really do need to find better friends, Zane. Why do you insist on hanging out with pathetic creatures so beneath you?" Brooks spoke up. "Anyone ever tell you how bad you smell?" Quinn tugged on Brooks's arm to shut her up. "Yeah, fat chance of that." Apooch's next words to her were pointed, the kind that went in for the kill. "No more talk, worthless half-breed." Then black smoke curled out of his fingertips. Before I could even react, it zoomed toward Quinn and Brooks, knocking them to the ground, one on top of the other. Then the smoke took the shape of giant hands and muzzled their mouths. Brooks's own hands shot up to the smoke, but she couldn't remove it. Taking advantage of his momentary distraction, I inched back, thinking quickly. I needed that spear, but how was I going to get it? And then I remembered. "It will do as you command." It was a long shot, but I opened my hand, which was still pulsing with a strange energy. "Come," I thought. The energy wound up my arm, but the spear didn't make its way back to me. I tried again, this time with more concentration, which was pretty hard considering Puke was standing right in front of me in his murderous demon form. Then I felt it. One hot pulse, and when I looked down, the spear was in my hand. I couldn't believe it. Apooch let out a wicked laugh. "You think your little lightning spear is going to stop me?" I glanced down, and for a second I thought I heard a voice coming from inside the spear, muffled like it was being smothered under a pillow. I knew launching the thing at Apooch while he was expecting it was lame battle strategy. Hondo always said to catch your opponent by surprise, because if they know the attack is coming, they'll prepare a counterstrike, or in my case, a death strike. The air shifted, turning cold, and a demon runner emerged from the jungle. Then another and another, all dragging their hairy knuckles along the ground. Those guys again?
Now you must suffer for Bawan, Apooch said to me, and for removing my eyes.
He motioned to my wrist.
I must say, I didn't anticipate that move, but no matter. You'll pay for both, and you will be the greatest prize the underworld has ever seen. God-born of Hurakan, the great creator.
Brooks roared angrily, trying to get to her feet, but Quinn had her pinned, which only made Brooks lash out more wildly. I swallowed hard. My heart thrashed around in my chest. I was outnumbered, outsmarted, and outpowered. Apooch kept on.
And when all is said and done, your father will suffer too.
The demon runners hissed and groaned impatiently.
Hurakan doesn't have anything to do with this.
I bent my knees and gripped my spear, ready to fight whichever demon came at me, preferably one at a time. Power throbbed in my legs, and I wondered how long it would last.
Oh, but he has everything to do with this. He is at the center of my plan. But enough of that. Let's get your punishment started, shall we?
I'd rather not.
The demons bared their nasty fangs.
Maybe we should begin with your friends, he said.
At the same time, thick ropes of white hair slithered out of the forest, followed by a dozen new demons. These were different from the demon runners I'd seen. Instead of blue skin, theirs was a glistening silver that shimmered in the moonlight, and it was thick, like a shark's. They had long white hair that hung in thick braids down their backs, swinging back and forth like tails. They shrieked, leaping onto the backs of Apooch's little army with amazing force. Teeth gnashed, claws ripped, hair choked. The black smoke hands released Brooks and Quinn and rose into the air. They formed ribbons and wound themselves into a long serpent that headed toward the silver demons. I launched my spear at one of Apooch's guys, testing its accuracy. It incinerated the monster on impact, then zipped back into my hand. Apooch narrowed his gaze.
Very good. Your little toy can melt demons, but it can never kill me.
Quinn sat up with a wince. Brooks's eyes were bright as she got to her feet, reached into her waistband, and pulled out her demon-burning flashlight. Apooch pivoted as a woman with long blue locks materialized from a curtain of fog. Her skin was the color of a white-hot sun, and her eyes burned with real fire. She shifted her white cape and extended one arm. A single flame danced on her palm and grew into a globe. Puke's mouth curled into a sick smile. Then the woman hurled the fireball at him.
No! I screamed, launching myself forward to shove him out of the way. The fireball hit me in the back, exploding on contact, and it knocked me off my feet, but it didn't kill me. I didn't even feel its heat.
The woman narrowed her fire eyes at me, smiling murderously.
Godborn, she hissed.
Then she launched another fireball, but this time I didn't get up fast enough. I turned to see the damage. Puke opened his mouth and inhaled the thing before blowing it back out as a stream of smoke.
Hello, Ishtam, he said. How's my throne? Did you keep it warm for me?
Her eyes darted between me and Apooch.
I destroyed it,
she said, with a wicked grin that showed a mouthful of gray teeth.
How does your new hell taste?
Her long white cape dragged across the ground as she came closer, giving me a better look at it. The garment was made of small bones, and its hem was lined with teeth.
The demon's hair is a nice touch,
Apooch said, as he indifferently watched the last of his demons get smothered. Why was he so calm, so confident?
Ishtab's victorious demons dragged themselves over and circled us like hungry wolves. Quinn and Brooks stood back to back as they waited for the first strike.
Ishtab?
My voice squeaked. I was about to tell her not to kill him when she cut in.
Shut up, Godborn.
Ishtab raised her hand to silence me. Her hungry glare shifted to Quinn.
Traitors always pay the highest price. Soon you will be dead.
Then to Apuch.
You'll like what I've done with Shibalba. I have a special little corner waiting for you, my pet.
Apuch snarled. It sent chills down the back of my legs. If I were betting on a winner, I might have gone with him. Ishtab's eyes blazed. It was now or never. I had to take advantage of Puke's being distracted. I gripped my spear, preparing to throw. Then Ishtab stepped closer to me. And as she did, a 10-foot wall of fire rose up behind her. Two beasts walked out of the flames. Huge black hounds, twice the size of lions, with long bared fangs and growls that shook the ground. One had eyes that burned white. And the other? Its eyes flickered, changing from burning red to soft and brown and so familiar. I gasped, blinking to be sure. The brown-eyed beast had only three legs. Chapter 39. I stumbled back. Rosie? No, no, no. I was dreaming. It was a trick. Then I remembered what Ms. Cab had said. She'll be changed. I fell to my knees. Rosie's eyes switched back to red. She sniffed the air near me. Did she recognize me? Rosie? I mumbled. Her pointed ears pricked. Apuch scoffed at Ishtab.
You think your hellhounds can stop me?
He looked around at the few demons still standing.
Or your pitiful horde?
Zane! Hondo shouted. We all spun to see him run into the clearing, waving a flashlight, pointing its flesh-burning beam. Jazz was right behind him, and they were both wearing red masks like Quinn's. Ishtab raised her hand and said some strange word I didn't recognize. The demons charged toward Hondo and Jazz. Black hair grew out of the demons' mouths at freakish speed. Hondo and Jazz were outnumbered. Why would Hondo be so stupid? Then I realized he wouldn't. No way would my uncle march into battle without reinforcements. While I was distracted, Apuch blew a hot breath, creating a barred cage of black smoke all around me.
No!
I screamed.
Relax for a while. This should be fun to watch, he said. Should we take bets? I'm going with the demons.
I rushed toward the smoke bars, thinking I'd pass right through them, but they were as strong as iron, and I slammed into them before stumbling back, dazed. I lifted my spear, hoping it could cut through the spell, but when I launched it at Apuch, it bounced right off the smoke. Panic clawed at my insides. I couldn't let anyone else fight this battle for me. A great wind blew across the field, hot and dry, spreading Ishtab's flames. Quinn crawled over to me. I wanted to harness the fire, to draw it in and use it against Apuch. But what good would it do me? First, I didn't know how to control it. Second, if Ishtab's fire couldn't kill him, mine surely wouldn't. And I might end up torching the whole place, and Brooks and Hondo with it. I couldn't take my eyes off Hondo, who had climbed into a tree and was pointing his deadly red light on the demons below. They writhed and screamed as the beam burned them. Apuch merely leaned against my cage, watching and smiling.
I really need to get one of those toys.
A second later, dozens of red-robed warriors raced from behind the trees. The Spark Strikers trained orphans. So many things happened at the exact same moment. Shrieks split the hot air. The hellhounds growled and gnashed their teeth. Everyone ran at each other like a stampede of elephants. The ground shook. It was all chaos and hair and fangs and screaming. Brooks, now masked, took off running into the melee.
Jazz fought off three demons while another clung to his back, strangling him with a thick band of hair until his eye bugged out. Brooks aimed her flashlight and burned the demon off Jazz's back. It writhed into a column of black smoke. The Red Warriors hurled themselves right into the demon's paths, displaying no fear as they reached into their robes. By the time I realized what they were reaching for, their lightning bolts were already flying through the air, exploding like fireworks. Now I knew why they were all wearing masks. I covered my eyes and waited for the searing pain to come, but it never did. I opened my eyelids, fluttering them wildly. I could still see. The silver demons screamed, clawing at their faces as their eyes burst into flames. Ishtab raised her hands toward the field and was chanting something when Quinn scrambled to her feet and rammed a lightning rod into her spine. Ishtab exploded into a tower of white fire. "Now!" Quinn yelled at me. "The magic will only hold her for seconds." At the same moment, Brooks morphed into a hawk. I guessed she could do it because Ishtab was out of commission, at least temporarily. Quinn stepped back, her eyes wide as she watched her sister fly at the god of death. Then Quinn dove between Apuch and Brooks. With a flick of his wrist, he sent them both hurtling over the wall of flames. "Brooks!" I shook the smoke bars. Apuch turned to me and smiled, taking a deep breath.
"I just love the smell of war and death. Do you smell its sweetness?"
Hate burned inside of me. "Let me out, you disgusting cockroach!" "Don't judge." It was the only insult I could think of in the moment.
"And you'll what? Kill me with your little lightning spear?"
He nodded once, and the smoke prison disappeared. I didn't hesitate. I launched the spear at Apuch. It rocketed toward him, a blazing light, but right before it hit, he vanished. I spun to find him behind me, smiling. He twisted me around and gripped the back of my neck, drawing blood with his nails. So much for my dynamo spear, which, by the way, was now lying on the ground like a dead snake. The world spun. Colors morphed into each other. Everything churned in a blur of amber light, and at the center of it all, tall towers of thick mist rose from the burning ground, one after the other.
"Let's stick around a bit, Godborn. This is going to be fun,"
Apuch said, gripping me tighter. Fun? This was so not fun. Five figures walked through the fire. I recognized Matt immediately, and I have to admit I was glad to see him. He was more spiffed up than I'd seen him last, wearing a dark blue pinstripe suit with a white button-down shirt and no tie. Next to him was a burly dude with a long beard and black circles inked around his eyes. He wore a leather jacket, tattered jeans, motorcycle boots, and a sour expression like someone had woken him up from a long nap. The other three figures stood erect. My still-in-shock mind realized slowly that if Matt was here, then that meant, holy smokes, these were Maya gods. Chapter 40. My relief turned into misery when I remembered that the gods also wanted Apuch's head. Since I was, well, paralyzed, I wasn't exactly in a position to do the deed myself, and we all know what that meant. I was headed to Soldier of Death boot camp. To be honest, I don't even know why I have to write this next part, since you gods already know what happened. Whatever. Apuch gripped me harder and began to chuckle.
"Ma'alob Akab. Buenas noches, old friends. The council is all back together. How chummy. So good to see you. And Ishkakao, you're looking well these days. Don't look a day over 2,000.
Straight dark bangs framed the eyes belonging to the goddess of chocolate, who actually didn't look a day over, like, 30. She was small and willowy, and she walked more gracefully than the others. This fact was made even more obvious by her brown catwoman-like bodysuit. Her bronze skin glistened as she narrowed her eyes, then smiled.
"And you're smelling as foul as ever, Apuch."
The burly dude looked me over, then said to Apooch, "We end this tonight."
"Oh, you mean to send me back to my prison, Nakon?"
Apooch said, faking a shudder. So the burly motorcycle dude was the god of war? Kind of a cliche, if you ask me. Matt shook his head.
"The plan is to kill you, actually."
At about this time, the Spark Striker's army retreated into the jungle, and Ishtab was released from the bolt's power. She shook her head, looked around, and adjusted her cape.
"Someone is going to pay for that," she said through gritted teeth.
My eyes roved the trees, where I spotted Jazz and Hondo holed up not 20 yards away. Were Brooks and Quinn okay? Rosie and the other hound stood behind Ishtab, but Rosie kept looking in my direction. Had she remembered me yet? Apooch grunted.
"Did you all think I'd come here to your little playground unprepared? That I'd just walk into your clumsy trap?"
Is that what this was? A trap with me as the bait? I searched the remaining two gods' faces, wondering if one of them was Hurakan. I didn't even know what his human form looked like. The guy half my size, with spiky bleached hair, khakis, and a starched blue button-down shirt, was definitely not Mom's type. That left the one on the far end, the one who wouldn't take his eyes off me. He had dark, disheveled hair, looked like he hadn't shaved in 3 days, and was so stiff he could have been made of stone. He wore a dark t-shirt, dark pants, and a leather band on each wrist.
"Let the boy fight him," he said coldly.
"Yeah, so that pretty much stole my breath. Nice to see you too, Dad." Khaki dude ran a hand through his hair, then said,
"Why would we let a mere boy fight our greatest enemy? Let's end this, Hurakan."
"Isn't that why you said we had to come here? Back to this place?"
Ishkakau said, throwing her hands on her hips. Matt and Dad exchanged a glance. What were they up to?
"He's not a mere boy," Matt said.
With a twisted smile, Ishtab stepped forward.
"He's..."
Hurakan silenced her with a glare. He came closer, still staring at me.
"He is the prophesied one. He released Apooch."
A hush fell over the jungle. Ishkakau, burly dude, and khaki guy, who I guessed was Alom, god of the sky, gasped.
"Those were lies," Ishkakau said. "Told by..."
She stopped herself. Nakone popped his knuckles.
"Yeah, well, that would make him a god, and that's not possible unless..."
His face turned red, and I thought smoke might come out of his ears.
"Which idiot god broke the sacred oath?"
he roared. The silence was so loud my ears started to ring. A brief movement in the trees caught my attention, and I saw Jazz muscling Hondo, covering his mouth and pinning him in place.
"No, Hondo," I thought. "This isn't a fight you can win."
Jazz was right to lock him down.
"Oh," Apooch said. "This is getting good. Do tell us, Hurakan, who broke the sacred oath?"
Hurakan lifted his chin and clenched his jaw.
"Zain Obispo is my son, the son of wind, storms, and fire. He has the blood of a creator and a destroyer, and I claim him as my own."
My heart skipped so hard I forgot about Puke's nails digging into me. I forgot about the quest, about becoming a soldier of death. I was the son of wind, storms, and fire. Holy smokes, that sounded so tough. Hurakan's voice found me.
"By claiming you here in the old world before the council, I give you full powers."
"Full powers? Wait, is that what Matt meant?"
"I said you would control fire eventually. Today is that day."
"Why wait? Why now?"
"You needed to be on sacred ground, and I had to claim you in front of the council. It's the only way for you to defeat Apooch. Do you accept these powers?"
Was that a trick question?
"Zain!"
"Okay, okay, yes." What happened next is hard to explain, even to imagine, for humans at least. Maybe for you gods, too.
Heat exploded inside of me and raced like lava through my muscles, down my nerves, and into my bones. The horrible pain made me want to scream, to fall to the floor and curl into a ball. But I was still paralyzed by Apuch's grip, so no one could see my torment. Ishtab shifted her cape back and forth impatiently. Then she shrieked, "Nothing happened." Apuch laughed and said to Horakan, "I didn't think you had it in you, old friend. Didn't think you'd give up your own freedom for a worthless human. And it was all for nothing. Look, the boy didn't change. He has no dominant power. Maybe your blood isn't so potent." Hurakan narrowed his glare. He tried to come closer, but he couldn't before red snakes curled around his ankles and wrists and formed chains, shackling him. With a sigh, Matt shook his head and said to him, "You know the consequences." Hurakan didn't even flinch. "You are to be sentenced by old world laws," Matt said to Hurakan. I could tell by the look on Matt's face that his heart wasn't in his words. He was going through the motions because he had to. But why not stand up to the other gods? Was he trying to protect Pacific? Alom said, "What about the boy? The law is the law. He has to die." Ishkakau nodded in agreement, as did Nakon.
"If he's going to die anyway," Ishtab said, "then let's use him. Let's see if he can defeat Apuch. No sense in all of us getting our hands dirty if we don't have to."
Hurakan said coolly, "Let him fight."
"Good idea," Apuch agreed. "He wins, and you can all go home. I win, and we can prepare for war."
Then, with a shrug, he added,
"What beautiful irony, Hurakan. A war with your son fighting at my side."
Hurakan's eyes changed from gold to black as he searched my face.
"You know what to do."
"No, I don't know what to do. And in case you haven't noticed, I'm sort of paralyzed right now."
"Find the source."
No more words were spoken. Instead, there was an image. Had Hurakan put it in my mind, or had I conjured it up? I couldn't move. Couldn't fight, couldn't do anything. But I had the jade. I understood what I had to do. As Puke's grip tightened around my neck, I heard a low growl behind us. When Apuch turned, Rosie released a mouthful of fire. I drew it to me as I envisioned the empty. Chapter 41. I didn't know if it would work, if I could travel to the empty with Apuch, but it was my last option. I floated in emptiness, spinning in a void of black. Then came a long tunnel of white mist. When I felt a familiar bounce, I opened my eyes. The sea, the pyramid, the jungle were all there, exactly as I'd left them. I sprang to my jaguar paws. I'd made it. I didn't celebrate for long because Rosie's fire burned hot inside of me and because I heard a sickening hiss coming from inside the temple. I instinctively crouched. From the moonlit shadows came a monstrous blackish-green snake the size of Jazz. Of course Apuch would inhabit the body of a giant snake when his spirit jumped here. Whitish liquid oozed from between its scales, and when it dripped to the floor, it turned into maggots. Writhing, slimy, disgusting maggots. No wonder the guy reeked.
"Little godborn,"
Apuch hissed as he slithered toward me. His slitted eyes blazed red. His yellow fangs glistened in the moonlight.
"You think you're very smart, don't you?"
Man, I was so hoping he'd turn up as a lizard or maybe even an ant. I inched back, remembering what Hurakan had said, that the empty was his creation, made of his power and his magic, a place where the other gods' powers couldn't follow. Apuch's nostrils flared.
"Do you like my chosen form?"
"A goat would have been better." He reared up,
showing me the maggoty red scales of his underbelly.
If I had hands, I'd applaud you, little godborn. I mean,